Welcome back to the Hawks Talk podcast, your source for everything about the Upper Valley Nighthawks and the NECBL. This is season 3, episode 2, Setting the Stage. I'm your host, Phoebe Winters, joined by co-host Caitlin Beal and our public address announcer, Greg Fennell. Caitlin, Greg, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks, baby. How are you?
Doing well. Caitlin, I know you're joining us from abroad. Where are you today?
I'm in Milan today, actually, but I'm studying abroad in London, so this is just a quick weekend trip.
Greg, how are you doing?
All right. Enjoying another lovely winter day, watching snow fall off the roof and branches fall off of our maple tree out back.
Well, Caitlin and Greg, I know that the season is still 3 months away, but there's still a lot to be excited about for this upcoming season. For example, the 2025 schedule has already been released, and we've seen some additions to the roster being made. And from that 2025 schedule that was released, we can see that the Nighthawks are going to be kicking off the 2025 season with 3 away games before they make their home debut on June 7th against the Vermont Mountaineers. Now, this isn't unusual for the Nighthawks, as the past 3 seasons have started off this way with 3 away games. But Greg and Caitlin, I want to ask you, what do you think the advantages and some of the challenges of starting the season with 3 away games might be? Caitlin, we can start with you.
Okay, yeah, definitely. I definitely think there could be some pros and cons to this. Obviously, it makes the team more resilient starting the season off away from home, especially if they've been practicing in Vermont together as a team. They'll have that home field kind of knowledge, but then moving to a different environment is going to be a big adjustment for the team to start off, but it really will. They'll have to work together as a team quickly and get to know each other and really adapt to their environments, which I think is a good learning opportunity. And kind of looking at the last 2 seasons, last season, the opening game, they won 8-3, and that was away. But then the season before that in 2023, they lost their first away game, but then they won the following two. So honestly, it could go either way. I think with being away at first, as we've seen the last 2 seasons, one was a win, one was a loss. But regardless, I think that it will be a strong start to the season. I don't know your thoughts on this, Greg.
What I've noticed from hosting players over all the years here is that they tend to bond very quickly. We're getting players from all over the country, a lot of Southeastern guys, a lot of mid-Atlantic guys, and as soon as they get here, they get to know each other really well and form friendships. I think the fact that the Nighthawks are playing 3 games on the road gives those guys the opportunity to bond a little bit quicker. Most of them are not used to the shortness of the road trips here. They might be used to 8, 9, 10 hour bus trips to get to a conference game when the college season rolls around. So they actually kind of like the fact that it's only going to be 75 minutes to get to Keene. It's only going to be 60 minutes to get to Montpelier or 2 hours out to Sanford. So 3 games on the road, I think, gets them opportunities to get to know each other better and also gets them opportunities to get used to what a road routine would be like, showing up at the field, picking up the bus, heading out to the ball game, and not having to have to worry about driving halfway across the country to get there. So not so much from a wins-loss standpoint, but more getting used to knowing each other. I think that's where 3 games off the bat is really kind of a nice thing for the Nighthawks.
Yeah, great. I definitely appreciate your perspective on this since you've been with the Nighthawks before. So getting to see like how that culture gets formed early on in the season and how the guys get to know each other. You bring up an interesting point about the bus rides. As you said, a lot of these guys are used to those longer trips from their college seasons. So they're used to having to fight off the bus legs and get used to those away game situations. So being able to have those shorter trips is definitely interesting and a nice adjustment for the team going from their college baseball season in the spring to summer baseball. And Caitlin, I like what you mentioned about last season with the outcomes of those games. I think it is interesting seeing them take on 3 away games right in a row. They aren't really getting used to playing at their home stadium, but getting to form that culture with the team, get into a routine before they're faced with their homestead crowd is definitely an interesting way to start the season. But I think definitely the returners will have experience with this, and then the coach knows what to do since the past 2 seasons have started this way as well. But a very special guest on today's podcast. As I said, we're calling this one Setting the Stage. We've got our general manager, Matt Wright, with us to shed some more light on what fans can expect for this upcoming season and kind of set the stage for you guys that are listening at home. So, welcome, Matt. How are you doing today?
Great. Yeah. Glad to be with all of you. Glad to kick off this new season of the podcast.
So, Matt, the season's still 3 months away, but as our general manager, can you share with the fans what new and exciting things they can expect for the 2025 season?
Yeah. 2025 is a big year of growth for us. We've really continued to increase our attendance every year. We're expanding our reach and our sponsorship. Acquisition and retention, and the companies we work with. We're working with some areas all the way down to Springfield and Bells Falls up to Burlington with Citizen Cider for 2025. Our reach as we continue to grow, we're in year eight now, and we are still in that early stage compared to some teams like Keene and Vermont that have been around for close to 30 years now. So 2025 for us, we have a lot of expectations. We have a lot of great staff coming in. We have the biggest staff that we've had since I've been involved with the team. I believe we have 32 staff members from top to bottom, which will allow us to really excel in the areas that we need to continue to grow in to make the team successful for 2025 and beyond.
Thank you. You bring up an interesting point. The Upper Valley Nighthawks are still in the beginning stages of forming this team. What's some things that you've learned from the other teams in the NECBL that you've been trying to implement to the Nighthawks?
I think it's interesting to see how different teams operate in this league and how the league operates as a whole, because we are working together as 13 teams, but we're also playing against each other all season. So we really try to share ideas and to learn different strategies that work based on your market, based on your fan base, because you do have so many different markets in this league, between something like North Shore being near Boston, down to Newport, Rhode Island, another big city. Keene, New Hampshire, has a great following. So seeing what these teams have done to be consistent, whether it's their community outreach or their fan interactions during home games, promotions that they run, trying to take some of those concepts and make them our own, as we get, more seasoned in this league. Not to say that, everybody involved here has the experience, but it's more so just getting the roots grown in our communities here in the Upper Valley. And I think that's what we have to our advantage, is that we have so many small communities around where we play that buy into this organization and this program, as opposed to one metropolitan area. So we've really been able to get a lot of variety in the fans that we have. And the companies that we work with, the interns that we are able to recruit that want that different lifestyle, because Vermont does offer a lot of different opportunities than, say, Rhode Island or Boston or Connecticut. So we really try to play off our strengths, but also learn from, what those other teams are doing well and, the reason for their longevity.
Follow up to that about how you're talking about, planting some roots, growing as a team. And obviously, a big step this year for the team is hosting the All-Star game, which is obviously very exciting for all of us. And it's going to be a big production. And, we're going to really step up what the team has to offer in terms of our broadcast. So, can you talk a little bit about the All-Star game, what people can expect, and what you specifically are excited about?
Yeah, the All-Star game is a really exciting event for the league, and having been to quite a few of them over my time here in Vermont and Newport, North Shore last year in Bristol, seeing how the different teams have approached hosting such an event on a large scale. In the grand scheme, the All-Star game is more important than the championship for these players that are getting seen by all 30 major league teams at the All-Star game. And it's a real community involvement event and a community-based event. It's something that we've talked about for a couple of years, but it is a big undertaking to actually host it. The planning process starts shortly after you're awarded the game, which is the year before. We've known since it was September last year that we would have the game for this year. So it's been a lot of planning, a lot of organizing, sponsors and promotions, and we have a couple of exciting announcements that we haven't made yet for the All-Star game that we're finalizing. So it's something that on that checklist of things you go through in your career, it's one of those things you want to do, to say you've hosted it, because there's so much that goes into it. You have to really kind of cradle it as it goes along and make sure that it turns out how you want it to be, because it's so unique to your organization and your community, and the final product comes out. So I think I'm, most excited to see the community come together for that event. But also New England as a whole, we're going to have all 13 teams represented, all 13 communities with fans and parents and interns. We're expecting hopefully in the range of 3,000 to 4,000 fans for that game, potentially more. I think Bristol had close to 4,000 for last year. So it's a huge event for the league, and we're really glad that we get the chance to showcase our community, our organization, the talented staff that we have, and all the players, the best players that the league has to offer.
I guess I'd like to follow up on that, in that I've been to one All-Star game myself down in North Adams back in 17, and all the other places you mentioned, like North Shore and like Bristol, have bona fide stadiums, I guess you could say, in some respects, whereas Maxfield is basically a high school field with temporary, not temporary bleachers, but not a fixed stadium per se. If you're drawing 3,000 or 4,000, are there plans in place where you need to put in temporary infrastructure for this to accommodate that many people?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because the big part of what we've been doing to get ready is putting together a laundry list of things we need to change or upgrade to the facility and the operation, to make this possible. So we're hiring more game day staff for this year. We've already ordered new bleachers to replace old bleachers. So we'll be adding about 800 seats, as opposed to what we have now. I think it'll put us around 1,500 seats at the field. So we're adding another of the big sections like we have down first base. There'll be another one on third base. We'll be replacing the ones behind home plate. They'll be twice as big, replacing the smaller set on first base with a 10 row section. So upgrading the seats was a big thing, and the parking was a big thing for us, expecting so many people. And the town and the Parks and Rec have been great to work with us on giving us more options of where to park. For those familiar with our facility, we have two regulation soccer fields in the back, that we'll be using for parking if we need to, assuming we will need to. So those will become bona fide parking lots for that day, for those festivities. So we can add, a lot more cars back there. And I think as we get closer, we might get more of a sense of how many fans we might get, for that game, because it could be on the lower end. It could be, 2,500 to 3,000. I think it depends on who travels from the south and from the western, parts of New England for that game. But the improvements have been a priority, because there are things at the facility we need to either upgrade or change. The same thing with, rebuilding the game mound to regulation, rebuilding the bullpen mounds, making sure that the outfield is edged and the infield is edged, and the warning track is redone, to make it, presentable. So just a lot of material things that needed to be done and will get done before and during our 25 season to get ready for that game.
In terms of accommodations, I imagine that if you're expecting 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people, a lot of those are going to be family members of players from out of town teams. Do you have to accumulate a list, for instance, of hotel rooms or places where they can go? Because I can't imagine all of them are going to be making one day trips to come up for this.
Yeah, I think that's where the Upper Valley plays into our favor, because there's so many offerings for lodging and restaurants and places to spend their time outside of Maxfield, when they're here. And I think if you go 15, 20, or 25 minutes away, there's a lot of options. We have some immediate options right down the road, or close by in Lebanon. But there's so many tourist friendly things that people can do close by, which is part of our pitch to the league for this All-Star game, was that the Upper Valley is becoming a place that people are traveling to, and has been for a while for leisure and vacations and things. So we have a list of immediate hotels that are in the area that fans can use. I'd like to develop some relationships with them for discounts and things like that, which are in the works that people can use. But we really benefit from being in, I think, more of a widespread area in that sense, where there's a lot of options. If you go to Hanover or Queechee, Woodstock, which none of them are far away. So people have quite a range of options to choose from when they're planning for, like you said, for a lot of them, probably a weekend, instead of just that one day.
You don't mind we skip into a different topic here, Phoebe and Caitlin. Let's talk about the roster for a little bit. It's exciting for me as a host to see who is likely to come back, but we have to be honest here. We are still, what, March, April, May, June, 4 months from the start of the season, and the college season itself, as of this recording, doesn't start for another week. We know there's going to be turnover. So what would you say is the rough average of turnover on the roster that we see now versus the one that we're actually going to see come first week of June?
I think we could have a full conversation about this, or full episode rather, about the state of college baseball now and where it's going. We recently had our winter meeting. The league, all of us in the league, went down to the ABCA conference in Washington, D.C. at the start of the new year, and met with, our Major League Baseball reps, met with other summer leagues, a lot of college coaches that go to that conference, to talk about where things are going and how things have been recently, which again is a lot of turnover on the rosters, and how to combat that. What do we do to limit the turnover as we go through the summer? Because unlike something like the Cape, where that's more of a showcase league and players are intended to go there for a couple of weeks and then go home, we expect them and want them to stay for the summer here, which is of course becoming harder and harder to do. Last year, we went through the most contracts we ever have. I believe it was 82 contracts from, day one in October, November until the end of July. And that was something that was stressful for everyone, for host, for our president Noah, for myself, for the coaching staff, for those players that stayed for the summer. It's hard for them to always see these players coming and going so often. So we really try to put an emphasis this year on players that want to be here for the summer, having those conversations beforehand, and not, in addition to trusting their coach when we're told that, this is a great kid, he'll stick around. Hence why I think right now we have six returning players, which is higher than average, but six guys that were the core of that culture last year, like Trey Chrisman, Cole Fellows, Nick Sarge Quagliato, these guys that encourage the others around them to want to be there. I think it's a really touchy subject between playing time, and you bring in the whole NIL conversation, which makes things even more complicated. There's been instances already where players are asking, going to the Cape, asking to be paid. And if they're not paid, they're not going to play there. Paid in the sense of NIL situations, where the team might say, there's this opportunity for you to make $5,000 from this brand. But if that's not there, then they won't come. So it's becoming that situation where money is driving the business, and college baseball at the end of the day is a business now. And I think we're going to see the effects of that in the near future. I don't know if it'll be this year, but I think we're already going in that direction with the turnover. I think players are in control of the situations, and it's a matter of finding, again, those players that want to be here, and knowing that ahead of time, before they get here, that this is someone who we can rely on to stay, like those six returners, for the entire summer.
I found that NIL remark interesting because I don't fully understand how it works with the NCAA, but I also don't understand where a Nighthawk's responsibility for NIL would come into play.
Yeah, that's something we're still, honestly, it's a gray area. We don't even know completely what our role is in this because we are, of course, not NCAA sanctioned, but we do follow their rules as far as, we can't have coaches in the dugout that can recruit athletes. We can't have any monetary, as far as I know, any monetary payment towards those players. Like, I can't reach out to someone and say, I'll pay you to play for us. So the NIL avenue is something where, these players are getting opportunities to be paid by a brand or a partner. And the league is exploring those things where we're saying, maybe we'll work with this brand and our players will shoot a short video for them or something and then get a share of whatever sales come from that product. So that's still something we're working on. It's not something that was very widespread in 2024, as far as I know. Of course, it's a lot more popular at their schools where these players are getting, six and seven figure NIL contracts from, the likes of Nike and Under Armour and bat deals and things like that, which we all agree, I think, that they should be paid for their name and their image, which of course was a NCAA change a few years ago. But I think the effects on summer baseball are still to be determined on how that will trickle down and how much of a role we will play in that and how much that will affect their decision to come and play for us. And I think for some, that is already something they're thinking about, is will I be able to make money, during the summer when I'm away from school?
The options are, or there are things available to them within the context of the team, for instance, summer camp, for instance.
Yeah, the summer camps are a big part of what we do for the players and the community mostly. That's a and a shameless plug that our summer camps are now announced and parents and families can go and sign up for those now for 2025. But yeah, the players are able to help work at those camps and we always have them jump at the opportunity when we put it out there to the group to give them the chance to work a week at camp. And some of them, I'm sure, do it for the monetary value, but I think a lot of them also do it for it just because they love the teaching aspect of the game with our youth fans and the kids that really rely on them for those lessons for the week. And it makes an impression on them because you see them at the games and kind of attaching to their favorite players and sometimes that comes from working with that player at camp. But they do definitely have opportunities. And that's something that, we will always bring back. I think camps are really important to what we do.
I don't want to hoard the microphone here, ladies, but I do want to make one other point. From what you were saying before, Caitlin, about the beginning of the season, three games on the road and all. Last summer, the exact same thing happened, but unfortunately, the home opener got rained out, and that was probably the best opportunity to get a big crowd early on in the season. So you have 4 months to perfect your dry dance or non-rain dance, okay? No more rainouts for home openers this year.
Now, Matt, I want to turn your attention back to something you mentioned earlier. We've got a staff of 32 for the 2025 season, first time that you've had a staff of that size. What are some of the differences that fans will notice from the media side as well as their stadium experience?
Yeah, the staffing is something that we've been looked at in different ways around the league. I think the first year we did this was a couple of years ago where we had a creative team of five. We had an analytics team of four. And to put it in perspective, most teams will only hire one or two analytics interns. They might have two or three creative interns, which is great. They do great content and they meet the standard, which is what the goal is for most teams, but we want to raise that bar every year as much as we possibly can. And of course there's restrictions to that with housing and other kind of constraints that we all deal with in the league, all 13 teams. So this year, we kind of took it a step further where our creative team has grown to seven for this year. Our game day crew has grown to six, so that'll be more hands on deck around the stadium, around the facility to assist fans, to help with on-field games, concessions, merchandise, to make that experience more seamless for them, where we're not trying to have certain staff cover multiple spots or things of that nature. It's a big year for us in the sense of taking on more ESPN Plus responsibilities. We hosted our first game last year, and this year we'll have give or take eight home games on ESPN on the ESPN platform. And a lot of our games on the road with Keene and Vermont and Sanford will also be on that platform. So it's an exciting year for this staff because they are really experienced at the same time. And I think that's something where this league has grown a reputation for being a destination for college interns. And it kind of works its way around campuses that you hear the NECBL is where you go to get hired by professional teams. And it's true. It's not just a selling point for us or a recruiting point for interns. It's more so that it's proven that interns from the Cape and the NECBL are the most likely to get hired out of their time here with professional teams. And we've seen that here. We already have, two of our interns from last year are hired by professional teams with our mental performance. Coach Devin Drake is going to be working with the Diamondbacks this spring. And our play-by-play announcer Ian Behnke is going to be working down in Florida with multiple single-A teams for the season. So it's great to see that progression. It's great to see that our staff continues to be stronger every year because that's the driver of what we do. The staff and the players are kind of the vehicle for everything else we're doing. They allow us to explore new things and new projects and allow each of the groups to collaborate and make their job easier. So you're not having, one intern kind of carry five different tasks for the day. So I think it overall it'll make our experience more welcoming at the field. It'll be easier for everybody to know what their role is and to excel in that space, but also have the flexibility and the freedom to work on, different projects or different things that they want to try. And I think that's the most exciting thing is to see on paper how strong this group is. And the league recognizes that because they always they mention it at, board meetings that our staff is one that they're trying to replicate. They want to be what we have. They want to excel in the creative space like we have, and in the broadcast space like we have. So we just need to keep moving that finish line, and keep raising the bar, which I think we have for this year. Not to discount what last year's group did. They were extremely talented, but I think this year's group has the talent and the ability to really raise that bar even higher.
Well, thank you, Matt. We appreciate you taking the time to join the podcast with us today. And now, Caitlin and I would like to introduce a new segment to the podcast called Hunting for Answers. For this segment, we will ask you, the fans, to DM us on Instagram at UVNighthawks or tweet at us at UVNighthawks with the hashtag Hunting for Answers with questions you want the answers to. Then, in our next episode, we will be answering your burning questions. Again, that's at UV Nighthawks on Instagram or at capital UV capital N Nighthawks on Twitter with the hashtag Hunting for Answers. And with that will conclude season three, episode two of the Hawks Talk podcast, Setting the Stage. A huge thank you to our general manager, Matt Wright, for joining us. And thank you to everyone for tuning in to this episode. Caitlin, Greg, and I have a lot of excitement planned for the podcast this season, and we really appreciate your listenership. I want to thank Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell for joining me on the podcast. I'm Phoebe Winters, and this has been the Hawks Talk Podcast.